Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm Terry, and I am definitely an alcoholic.
Hi, Terry.
And I'm really glad to be here. I've had lots of correspondence with my friend Dale. This is like my third time that I was supposed to arrive, and I got to arrive tonight. I had a few debacles, and he said, "This is your time." And really, can you guys hear me okay? Okay. Really, this is about, God's time to shine. And so I had not one but two physical mishaps. I'm not really that clumsy, but I wasn't able to come until this evening, and I came to realize, and I felt really bad about having to cancel because I suit up and show up today, and you taught me that, and I'm forever grateful for AA. And I had to have a few more experiences and a good measure of a faith walk between, what is it, the spring? Yeah, spring, because I saw you guys at Serenity weekend. I got to meet Billy, and I joke and say that's what I get for being friendly. I got to be asked to be here with you people tonight, and I'm so grateful for that. And this is a huge, just applause to AA and the God of my understanding, because I was a very, very shy girl growing up, and so for me to stand in a group full of people at the front behind the podium is just a huge measure of how my life has changed so much. And so it's really important for me to say my home group is suffered enough. We meet at 7:30 a.m. Monday through Saturday at Tomahawk Baptist Church out in Midlothian, Virginia. So if you're ever our way, please come join us 9:30 on Sunday mornings at the DAV, Disabled American Veterans Association. And I like that. I need that whole, faith muscle, that shot, that God shot. We get to go every day, which I can go anytime I want. We're blessed with a lot of meetings in the Richmond area. But anyway, so the book tells us my sponsorship all along the way has told me, to explain what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And that you base your meeting on those last two paragraphs on page 29, how I establish a relationship with God. And so my sobriety date is June 3rd, 2001. I was a little confused about that date when I first got here, and I was really embarrassed that I had to go and tell them that it wasn't the date that I thought it was. I thought it was Memorial Day weekend, but my friend had the big party after Memorial Day weekend. And so, I thought that was a big deal. But you guys taught me that there's no big deals in AA, only if I make them. So what it was like. So I grew up in a very middle class home. I'm the middle child of three kids. My dad was a police officer. My mom did all the bookkeeping for the county of Chesterfield. Very middle class. I never did without. I always thought that I did because I went to school with a lot of folks that were from very wealthy neighborhoods. And from a young age, my older sister, very academic, very extroverted. My brother, very athletic, very extroverted. And I was about as red as that guy's shirt every time I got called on in class, and hated it. I hated any attention. I'm tall. Girls weren't tall back then. I just wanted to blend into the wall. Painful. Life was very painful. And it became very apparent that I was in an alcoholic home. My dad drank Budweiser beer, like I carry water around. He never really changed his demeanor very much when he was drinking, unless he drank liquor. Then it was, pretty angry, ugly behavior. But initially, as a child, growing up in a neighborhood where everybody was really very tight-knit, my parents were instrumental in getting our pool and like the tennis courts for our very small neighborhood going, and everybody was, it just kind of pitched in. We knew everybody. It was almost like a little small town, and drinking was always involved in all these little get-togethers, at the neighborhood pool, or long before that, these adult parties. And so as a little girl, I saw that as the adult beverage, that I get to have. And so I always thought that that was so exciting. My first drink, I remember we were latchkey kids. We had no family in town, so we kind of watched ourselves, which is amazing just from that we're alive. We did some mean things to each other growing up, and not realizing we really could have killed each other. Control, it was all at the center of control, right? And so we had a pantry with a cabinet above the pantry that was next to the refrigerator. And so my dad kept his fancy little, shot glass and decanters and all that kind of stuff up there. And that's going to be kind of the theme of my drinking. I like to dress my drinking up. And so my friend from up the street, I got the bar stool. I went up there, got the vodka, and I just eyeballed it, like I'd seen it done so many times. Big ol' vodka and orange juice. And I just gulped it down. I mean, I think I just drank alcoholically from the get-go. I had had a couple of sips of my dad's beer, when I was a little tiny, tiny thing sitting on his lap. And I remember thinking, oh, this is, this is great. And even though I didn't like beer. And but I felt a little woozy, and we kind of walked around the neighborhood. There was an elementary school. We kind of palled around. What are you going to do at 12, right? And I guess there's a lot you could do. But thankfully at that point I did not. And so my parents never noticed that the liquor was missing. They never noticed that I've been drinking. And that was also going to be a theme, like I hid my drinking from my family, people that I thought like it would matter, because not so much my mother, but growing up in my house, you had to do things a certain way. My dad was a police officer and military background. So there was a way to do things. And so if you didn't measure up, I know he loved me in his own weird way, but it was kind of used against you. There was a lot of shame messaging, and whether he meant it or not, I think it was probably a control measure for him, keep those kids in line, children are to be seen and not heard was, at the table, the dinner table, as the alcoholism progressed in my family, I would be afraid, like when I would put my hand on the door handle to go in the house, like I never knew what in the world was going to be happening. Whether my dad was going to be like kicked back and passing out in the recliner, or was there going to be some horrible chaos, yelling, screaming, possibly physical stuff going on. And it was scary. And so, I think I didn't know that then, that my own alcoholism derived from, for one, life was just too painful, being shy. Two, it allowed me to not feel, when I drank. I came to learn that, I wasn't afraid to talk to you. I wasn't afraid to dance. I wasn't afraid to do anything. In fact, later, I was quite capable of, doing a whole lot of things and telling you how to do everything else. And you weren't going to hurt me. And I've come to realize it's a family disease on both sides of my tree. Yay. I will say today I am the only person that I know of in my family on both sides that's in recovery by the grace of God. I held out for a long time. My dad's drinking, like it was the source of all the problems in my life. And if he would just quit drinking, my life would be so much better. But prior to that, after that first drink, going back and forth, I'm going to stop right here and just say, I knew there was something I wanted to say in the beginning. So this was shared by my first sponsor. She didn't know she was going to be my sponsor, and I didn't know she was going to be my sponsor, but she would say, I pray for God to give me the words to share that would help somebody else. And so and that's what I meant when I said this is God's time to shine, because it's my story. It's not about me. It's about really sharing my story in hopes that somebody will hear something to help them identify in and not compare out. And hopefully you'll find this wonderful fellowship like I did, even though I didn't want to. We used to go camping a lot for our family vacations. We started out tent camping. Don't get too close to the tent wall. It was an old army tent my dad had. The water will come leaking in. And then we had like a pop up and then a pull behind and then an RV. And so we would go to the, we were lucky enough to go to the beach every year for a couple of weeks. And I seem to find the people that are just like me, right? The book says that I will find those people. And so I found the kid that knew somebody that could get us liquor. And I've been drinking a little bit. I kind of know how to drink, right? It's right before I got my license, so I wasn't able to drive down there. But we all pitched in money and we had Purple Passion Party. And they were like, watch it, this stuff hits you. And my ego was already in full swing, like, this. And I like gulped that stuff down because it tasted like Kool-Aid. And oh my goodness, like I didn't even know where I was. And it was, that was the only camper around. And so I just went from being lucid to almost like a blackout. And I didn't know where my friend went because it was two families that went camping together. I found myself underneath this the showers that they have on the beach, and I'm like thinking, oh my gosh, I'm such just like so horrible, and I'm throwing up everywhere. And I find my way into the RV, and if you've ever been camping in an RV, the bathroom is definitely not any size whatsoever. It's probably about as big as this podium up about to where I am. And I, had been falling all over the place on the beach that was full of sand, and it was nasty. And people know when you come in an RV, like there's no quiet. And things move. And my parents kind of had noticed that I've been in the bathroom for a while. And so I was trying to change out of my clothes. I think I passed out with my head against the door on the toilet. And out falls their daughter with no clothes on. And they were like, where have you been? Where are your clothes? And it wasn't that rapid fire of questioning, but in my drunk state, that's what it seemed like. And I just couldn't keep up with the questions. And they were just like, oh my goodness. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in so much trouble. And the next day, and I was so miserable for like 2 days, and I didn't know how the hammer was going to come down on this one. And my parents were like, well, you just look so darn miserable. We think that's punishment enough for you. And I was like, wow, that was a clean getaway. You don't know my dad. Like, consequences with my dad were brutal, yard work, out the yin yang, painting, utility sheds. I mean, it didn't matter that I was a girl. And that was another thing, like, I felt like some of the treatment was a little rough for my dad. Even though I was a tomboy, But yeah, so my older sister went off to college, and that was probably one of my first resentments, but she kind of taught me how to drink. I wanted to be like her, and I wanted to wear all the disco clothes, and of course, disco died before I got to wear all that fun, cool stuff, Another resentment. And all the cool bars that she went to, like I just idolized the whole drinking thing, kind of like trying to think of that era, maybe in the 40s, where everything just was glitz and glimmer and, just everything was over the top. And so, it came time for me to graduate, move on. My sister did really well at Virginia Tech. I was just scared to death. I made good grades. I wasn't inadequate at all. I just, kept comparing myself to my brother and my sister. I'd always look to the left and look to the right. And you guys explained it perfectly when you would say I was a round peg trying to, or yeah, round peg trying to fit into a square hole, and all the time, over and over and over. I was just trying to be someone other than myself. It was just too painful. And so I worked for a little while with my dad. He ended up having some issues with the fine city of Richmond. And I don't really totally know that whole story. My parents sheltered us from that, but I think my dad probably did some things that weren't acceptable for the police force. I'll just say it that way, very kindly. And then he had his own business, and so I helped him do some administrative work. And I knew I didn't want to do that forever. So I went to school, and I got into an industry where drinking was really, really cool, and not at work, but it definitely ushered that lifestyle very well. And so I learned early on that I could not go out on a Friday night because I had to work every Saturday. And I tried it. I certainly tried it. But when I almost threw up in someone's lap one day, I was like, I just can't do it anymore because, I just can't. I can't go out. I promised myself, you're going to be home by 10 or 11. Well, the truth was, we didn't go out till 10 or 11, And so I would find out early on, but, it never clued me in that I might have a problem, that I would have to have these boundaries for myself with my drinking, especially if it came to like, I worked for a company that was one of many. They had a, a group of salons. And so whenever we would have our group get-togethers, in a spot that was close proximity, geographically, I would go, okay, you got to drink like a lady. You gotta, do this or do that. And I remember this guy in a meeting one time saying, when I had to control my drinking, it was sort of like I wanted to just chew the bark off of a tree. And I was like, wow, yes. I was so uncomfortable. Like I did not, I wanted to drink the way I wanted to drink. And that was it, A to Z. Every time I wanted to drink for effect. And, I always thought if my thought was, I'm going to meet the right man. I'm going to at this point later, I have my own home. I'm going to put a picket fence. I'm going to have 2.5 kids, the dog and the cat, and I'm going to be the American dream. Because I watched The Waltons, Little House on the Prairie, Fantasy Island, Love Boat. And we grew up with Norman Rockwell, and I was always trying to cram everything in my life to fit that framework every time. So, I was just going on this merry-go-round, and the drink was like the center of my life. I was holding up this other whole world, this whole life, and I was doing well at work. I got in this house, this wonderful thing in my life, like by myself. And other people are moving on, they've graduated from school, they're they're having a family, and here I am in this merry-go-round of life. I only drank by myself to get ready to go out. I was a driving drunk, and I like to party, and glitz, glitz. And more people, the better off it was, because it was just like one big happy party. Like I wanted all of life to be one big happy party. And I would end up in the craziest places. And so one night I ended up on the train trestle, taking in the full moon, the train trestle bridge going over the James River. And well, guess what? A train came. I'm like, how dare the train, but I was terrified, and I could still remember the brush of the wind, like I was lucid enough to realize I couldn't outrun the train, like that's only in cartoons, right? And then one night, I go to this swanky Christmas party. Because my best friend, my drinking buddy, my best friend had become the daughter-in-law to people that had started a vineyard. I kind of had some memories coming down or on the drive out tonight. I was like, oh yeah. And so, when I would help out, I got paid lovely and all kinds of fine wine, So again, I'm trying to dress my drinking up. And but anyways, I was at that swanky party, and I decided to go with my brother and some other friends to this pool hall. And it just didn't bother me. I kind of mixed with all kinds of folk. But I did like the dives, I because I could really kick it back, and then y'all just didn't care, And I remember this one guy made a racial slur, and apparently a gang fight ensued out in the parking lot. Some guy walked by with a sawed-off shotgun. I saw my brother almost getting beat to death right in front of my face, just like how. And I kept thinking every single time I end up in these situations, like, how does this happen? I'm a nice girl. I could just never link the dots together. I just couldn't do it. Wouldn't do it, and wouldn't allow it. And so, wow, time's flying. I need to get sober. But anyways, that's, I just say all that to say that's where my drinking took me. And by the grace of God, I lived through all of that, because that's not how it starts out. And I remember Miss Betty, she passed away, sober member. And when I first got sober, she would say, I can be a lady of dignity and grace today. And I hung on to that. I loved it when she shared that, because I was filled with so much shame, guilt, and remorse when I got here that I just thought, oh my goodness. So, anyways, filled with that shame, guilt, and remorse. I always believed that there was a God. I just thought God was getting to the end of his scroll, and that no more bad things, and I was going to be smite out of existence. And so, even drunk, my parents eventually divorced. My dad remarried. My stepmom's parents were church-going folk. So I was like, maybe I need to go to church. So maybe I'll meet the nice guy, right? And but I was still going and doing the same things. And I thought, oh my gosh, I only went to church like a couple times when I was a little girl. They're like, the roof is gonna cave in. If they really knew the real me and how I am, they're just gonna say, out of here, sister. And so fast forward, it brought me to a recovery church. There was, I just want to say this aha moment, because I know, if it's odd, is it odd or is it God? And so this girl that I worked with alongside for a long time, you get to know each other's clients. And I never really had a conversation with him, but I had gone to the gym because that was my other outlet. I was gonna work out like an Olympic athlete, even though I wasn't one. And I would eat rigidly. Like I was just always trying to be something else. And or somebody else other than myself. And I saw him at the gym on a day that I didn't normally go. And I went that day, and he said, hey, Terry, why don't you come to my church? This guy, got up in front of the church and gave his story about how alcoholism ruined his life. And I went, oh, okay, I'm going to this church. Nobody stands up and talks about that in church. Nobody. I'm thinking to myself. So I started going, and recovery has been taught to me like the peeling back of an onion. God peels back just one layer at a time. And it is, everything is in God's timing. And so, I heard about the 12 steps, found myself in recovery room of codependency, never worked a step. I was too terrified to just be that honest, right? And but I was introduced, and I knew a lot of people that went to this church. They were in AA. I saw the sparkle in your eye. You had something, and daggone it, I wish my dad had it. Always point the finger out, right? Are you coming back every single time? And but God meets me where I am, And this one woman that was in my recovery group, she said, I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic or not. Would you go with me to an AA meeting? And I was like, okay. I'm gonna be a great friend, right? And so I went with her, and we decided to go to dinner in AA, right? Like, I'm like, what has my life become? And oh, by the way, I had been praying. It took me a little while to remember, because people would say, I asked God to remove this obsession to drink, and people would say it happened every time. It might take a little time and extra prayer. And I was like, I never did that, but I did. I did do that. And I had put the drink down. So, and it was great at first, because I could remember where I was, where my car was, who you were, all of that. But it was not a guarantee when I was drinking. And so we go to this restaurant, and this group of people from way back in the day, the waitress is like, hey, they want to send a round of drinks. And I was like, I got mad, because I was like, where were they when I didn't have any money at the bar? Like, oh, I didn't have any money to drink, and but I was like, and I know it was the grace of God. I just politely declined. I said, no, thank you. And I was like, And so we go, and how we always ask, is there anybody here for their very first meeting? And she lifts her hand. And it's so weird. Like, I found myself sitting on my hands. And surprise, surprise, it was a speaker meeting, and the speaker was a woman. And I think I would have politely listened had it been a male speaker. But she pretty much told my story, and she just talked about how she helped, had this hole in her heart, and how she tried to fill that hole in her heart with drinking and a whole bunch of other things. And so the whole time she's sharing, it was like time stopped in this meeting. And I had like a movie going on of my life, and it was just flashing all those memories, And I was like, oh my gosh, is this the puzzle piece? Is this it? Because I would fall asleep. I would spill Cabernet glasses of wine on my nice white, bedspread, reading the Bible or a self-help book here and there. I never finished any of them. And sometimes it's only a sentence, like I would read out of it because I didn't know what was wrong with me. Like, what is wrong with me? And I was like, oh my gosh, is this the puzzle piece? And so the word descriptor is I felt like I had cement blocks and I was going off the pirate ship. I was walking the plank. Because I was like, I gotta talk to this woman. She cannot leave the building. I have to talk to her. And she was so kind, and she was very soft-spoken, which was not my family household. Things were loud, or we didn't talk about it at all. And I said, I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic or not. And I couldn't believe the words coming out of my mouth. And she said, you know what, I'm going to give you my number, and you call me, and you can discover whether or not you're an alcoholic. And she said it just like that. There was no emphasis, no like catchiness to it, like this is really the point. over here, because that's how we talked. We talked in riddles and like manipulation and all that growing up. You had to read people's minds, the inference. And I was like, wow. So I got home and I was like, don't move this, because I would misplace things all the time. And I didn't, I kept my house really, really neat. And in fact, as much as I didn't want to deal with bills, I would put them in paper bags because they would stack up. I paid my bills, but I didn't want to deal with it. And then I would put them in fine little totes. And so I couldn't find stuff when I wanted to find stuff, even though I had a filing cabinet, And so I was like, don't lose this. You lose stuff, you misplace stuff all the time. And I was like, well, she didn't say when to call her. Oh my goodness. And so I called her and she said, okay, well, we made a time to meet. She invited me into her home. She had something prepared. Would you like something to eat? Would you like something to drink? And we started going through the big book page for page. And when it came time to pray, we prayed together. And then we got to the fourth step. And she knew a person that was on my fourth step, and my little ego and my mind went crazy. And I cried. I was not a crier, because we were brought up, this is a tough world. You gotta be strong. You can't be weak. And if you showed your weakness, it was used against you. And I cried like a baby. Just breaking up with her. And she goes, she tried. She was like, well, you don't have to do your first step with me. You can do it with anybody, And because I just knew she was going to go talk, right? And because apparently that's who I was. And so I fired her. And this woman that had been going to the recovery church with me, she was in AA. And one day she must have seen it on my face. She was like, Tammy, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, no. And I'd hear, well, if you don't have a sponsor, you're sponsoring yourself. If you don't have a home group, you're homeless. All these silly little things we say, and they're so important. And I said, no. She goes, how about I be your temporary sponsor? And I was like, okay. And she goes, all right, we're going to do step one. I was like, oh, I've already done step one. And she goes, but you haven't done it with me. And so, we started the process over. I finally went to a meeting. Prior to that, I picked up a white chip because I didn't pick up a white chip at that meeting, and it was refreshing and scary at the same time. And I remember early on, you guys would always say, keep coming back. It works if you work it. And I was like, it's so nice people telling me to keep coming back. I just felt the love in the rooms instantly. And I didn't share this for a long time. I had put the drink down, but I was starting to see mirages of Cabernet glasses of wine floating out there, and I couldn't tell anybody. I was like scared to death. I was like, they're gonna lock me up. But I know that that's my disease today, and that my disease lies right between, my ears. It's a disease of perception. It's a feelings disease, and I know that I always wanted to feel way up here, or I was way down there, and I either wanted to stuff it, or I wanted to celebrate it, or whatever it, the drink was always the answer. And I remember you guys saying, if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you don't have to live that way anymore, and you only have to have one bottom. And by the grace of God, I've only picked up one white chip. But I will tell you how many times I broke a promise to myself when I would come to, and I would say, I am never doing that again. And there I was, every single time. So anyways, I've got to the fourth step. Her name is Gordon. I think she lives out this way. I think she, because she moved to Charlottesville. We were kind of, she was in the middle of moving. And I was like, I gotta do this thing, Gordon. And she's like, well, by this time she's up in Charlottesville. And she said, well, you can drive up here if you want. We can do it. We can do it. And so that's what I did. And it was an all-day affair. She made a meal and we had time. And I was so scared. I was like, there are two things on this damn thing that I do not want to say out loud, And Champ, old timer at home, he always says, the bigger the problem, the smaller the step. And so I knew I didn't want to walk around with all that anymore. And so I did share it. And lo and behold, those two hideous, horrible things that I did not want to say out loud, she had gone through those things too. And I've come to find that, and subsequent, four steps, because it, I don't recommend this to anybody. If you're new, please don't do what I did. It took me 4 years and four different sponsors to get through all 12 steps, But that first step, you told me that's the only one I had to do 100%. We're powerless over alcohol. There's no and, there's a hyphen there. You said it goes right together, that my life had become unmanageable. And I certainly knew the whole unmanageability thing. I knew that for a long, long, long time. I just couldn't admit that I was powerless over alcohol because, I had a way of surrounding myself with people that I thought drank and did other substances way more than me. So I didn't have to look at me. And I couldn't look at me. I am in an industry where, looks are my business. And I just couldn't look eyeball to eyeball in the mirror. Hated me. I wanted to thumb unwheeze it. I wanted that grand gesture, but that meant I would have to say it to somebody because I couldn't do it myself. But I was just so lost and miserable, and I felt hopeless. And doing that first step, you said if you do that 100%, for one, you're a winner, and two, that opens the door to step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And so I have this little, I did it because you told me to do it. It's the believing part. That's all I have to do is believe. And so when I was going through step two with someone else, bringing them through the journey, I was like, do I really believe? Like I, because I was always holding things out. Like, yes, the promises are going to come true for you, but are they really going to come true for me? And so I said, okay, I know this is not cool, and this probably is not how God works, but if you really love me, God. This is before butterflies became a thing. I'm going to see butterflies. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to hear Amazing Grace and not in church. Well, I would see butterflies like in January. I would hear Amazing Grace. I walked into the store back when they had like the CDs, and they would have a song play, randomly. Amazing Grace came on. I'd be like, well, damn. And so I my belief and my faith walk was strengthened. And so step three, made a decision to turn our life and will over to the care of a higher power, God as I understand him. And this my friend was telling me, she goes, this guy used to scare me all the time. And there was that old timer in the in this one meeting that I would go to at noon. And he scared the daylights out of me. We had a big table, and then it was almost like, we had an audience on each side. We had a stack of chairs on one side and a stack of chairs on the other. And I always made sure wherever this guy Bill was, that I was on the other side of the room because he scared the tar out of me. And he had this big thundering voice. But I always liked what he said. So I always like really perked up when he would share. And he was like, all you're doing is making a decision. You're not doing anything else. You're just making a decision. I was like, well, that's simple. And that's what you would say. This is a simple program for complicated people. And when you do a strong third step, then you're ready for the fourth step. And man, I was terrified, I was just terrified. And I would get all hung up on, my sponsor told me, write God at the top of the paper, right? But I wanted it to look just like the book. Like I was getting all hung up on the lines and the columns and the this and what everything that, alcoholic. I'll make any excuse, right? I'll just run fast from the thing that's going to help me the most, right? And finally did it. And then when I left Gordon, in Charlottesville, I was driving through the mountains and the sun was setting, And that's just a God wink, right? How beautiful, how perfect. I mean, there was I couldn't have timed that. And that fifth step was so freeing, it just allowed me to be connected because I was so disconnected all my life, Ugh, I wish I'd remember those tissues. I'm so grateful today because I was not grateful when I got here. That was one of my first homework assignments was I was supposed to write 10 things that I was grateful for, and they could not be my 10 fingers and my 10 toes. And you're so kind. Thank you. And so I had a hard time. I had a hard time, and Janice was my first sponsor, and I called her, and I was like, I don't know if I'm doing this right. I've only got like five things. And she said, just like you AAs always do. Well, this is how it worked for me. Here's a few things that I have on my list. She never told me, AA has always been given to me, with open hands. It's never been shoved in my face. I know I've been prayed over a lot. When I went to that recovery church, they were probably like, Hallelujah, she finally got it. But always love, always love, always love, never shame, no judgment. You taught me such a different way of life. That sixth step, that eventually grew. There were some glaring ones, but I was ready. I was ready. I was ready until, it's the seventh step, right? May I be willing, God, to have you remove all that stands in the way of my usefulness, right? Because I always think that God's gonna come and, or Tinkerbell's gonna come and tap me on the head, and it's just magically that's gonna go away, right? And it just does not work that way. I'm always brought to a situation where I get to choose to do something different. And that's what it's about, just recovery is learning how to take care of myself and just doing the next right thing. And the list. Wow, eight step. So I was taught to like do the columns, the ones you want to do, the ones you're like, and then the ones that are the no nevers. And my dad was at the top of that no never. And I was like, no way. Cold day, where. And not happening. Well, he was in and out of the hospital a lot. I'm pretty sure, drinking and other bad habits. And I was kind of nervous that it was going to be like it. Every time he went in the hospital, is this it? So there were a lot of heart problems. Every operation procedure known to man was done on that man. And I thought, I told my sponsor, maybe I should make those amends to my dad. So he ended up being my first amends. And I thought there was going to be a lot of loud racket. And I asked him, I told him I was wrong and what can I do to make this right? And I was ready for the blowback. And he said, you just did. And I was like, wow, power of God, right? And 10 step inventory, I don't always do it. When I do it, the peace. And that's what I was searching for all along in my life. I just wanted some peace. I don't have to like pass out today. I can go to sleep very well. I still, every once in a while, have a restless night. I was just sharing with my sponsor. I was like, oh my gosh, I had a dream about getting out with an old boyfriend. And that was weird. Thank goodness I woke up and I was like, didn't go there. I was worried actually we were going to go hang out. I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to want to get high. He's going to want to get high. Oh my gosh, am I going to have to get high? Like, doesn't matter how long you've been sober. It's just about today, for this moment. My disease never takes a rest, And so the 11th step, I started doing that long before, really I got a grip on the steps. I was like, I don't know, I'm kind of busy. I don't know if I have time to do all that, in the morning. And my sponsor was like, well, do you go to the bathroom? I was like, yeah. She goes, well, while you're in there, why don't you have a little quiet time, read something from the big book, read something from a devotional, and that's really literally how it started for me. But you guys always said, you can start your day over anytime. And so I found that to be true, that God's always there. I just have to get connected, like tuning into the radio station, you said, I just got to tune in. And the 12th step, that spiritual awakening, I thought it was supposed to be like the burning bush, but not the burning bush. It's like it talks about in the big book, it's just that educational moment, it's just for me, it was really kind of like sitting in that big book study. My disease was kind of creeping in and going, maybe you're really not like them. You don't do that anymore. You put the drink down and we get to that page. I think it's page 33 and it said once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And I was like, well, damn, I think I'm just going to be one of you guys forever. But I'm grateful for that today, and I try not to identify out, or compare myself out anymore. I try to identify in, and relate. And I can do that today. And you find people taught me a different way to live. I've gone back to school at different periods of my sobriety. I went whitewater rafting the first year of my recovery, and I'd always wanted to do it, but I was drinking too much, to spend the money on something like that, and I probably would have killed myself, I'm sure. I go to this my favorite little island every year for the AA Jamboree. I went there when I first got sober, and that was huge. I love the beach, and but I didn't stay sober at the beach, and you guys showed me that there's different things to do at the beach, other than drink. And so I haven't been able to go every year that I've been sober, but I get when I get to go, it's just like this amazing journey. There's like 300 or 400 people. If you ever get a chance to go, it's the Kitchen Table Group down in Ocracoke Island, North Carolina. They put it on. It's always the first full Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in November. So I have plans to attend. It's fabulous. And that's what I do. I learned, I got sober friends and I got to hear Father Martin speak. And I will agree with Father Martin today that the hardest thing for an alcoholic is to find that balance. Because I'm always either over here, I'm not gonna do it, or I want to go 100 miles an hour and I want to do it all, and I just want to fall somewhere in between. And Champ, I always quote him because he always has these cool things to say that I'm sure somebody shared with him. I just want to fall somewhere in between and be a blade of grass in a 50-acre field. I don't have to be front and center, which is not my comfortable spot, but I don't have to be out in the corner either. I just want to be one among many. And you guys have taught me how to do that, to suit up and show up all three sides of the triangle, a three-legged, table. I can't stand on two legs, I have to do, I get to do all of this is what you taught me. I get to do it all. And I have this beautiful life that I thought I was supposed to have something else. And you taught me acceptance is the key. And everything I have in my life, I know is from my higher power. It's from God. And it's just lovely. And so I think I'll just keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.